All right. Seabird guano. Man, how'd you like to have that job?
Right.
What are you holding the bucket?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had guano wars over this stuff, right?
Yeah. Right. It took me over the edge as far as how good your product was.
Yeah.
When I started using an Imperial Boost midsummer to fall, I saw a huge difference because I did one without and one with.
And we're just like, man, these are all just glorious, and they grow these.
We were there in the fall, and we were harvesting cabbages that were this big.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were cutting into them, and they were just as sweet as could be.
Good morning, Northwest Arkansas and America. My name is Mark.
I'm Josiah.
And I'm Chris.
Okay, and you're watching Two Nuts on a Tree. We're at Baker's Creek Flower Festival in Mansfield, Missouri, and just check out the scenery behind us.
It's great.
Check this out. Absolutely beautiful.
Woo-hoo.
This is right out the gate when you get here. We're just going to go around, see different vendors, have a really good time up here. You hear, point that a little bit like this. There you go.
Oh, I wasn't paying attention. I was looking at you.
And so, man, we're just going to have a good time today. We came up here. We're not working. We're just here to have a good time and enjoy ourselves. And Royal Gold is here, too.
Right. We're here to check out a lot of the rare seeds for your vegetable garden and so forth, and just see what else is out there. And hopefully promote, rareseed.com and see what's
going on. Absolutely. Baker's Creek Festival. Here we go.
Yeah. Let's
go. Okay.
All right. So that is your general all-purpose organic fertilizer that you sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 555.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really want to talk about the 322.
Okay.
To grow. Because, you know, everybody in our world has differences of opinion. And I'm a total organic chemistry freak. Okay. I read the boring stuff. All right. Yeah. Your 322. Yeah. Your 322 is my vegetables.
Yes.
That's what I use on vegetables. That is the, I mean, I wish that you would put it on their vegetable fertilizer. I do wish that you'd separate.
Okay.
That is my little beef.
I appreciate that.
Okay. Because, I mean, we did not rehearse this show, okay? All right. So my beef is, you know, make the 555 your general all-purpose for the house plants, okay, for perennials, annuals, tree shrubs, and all that, okay? I'm good with that. But I really wish your 322 would be vegetable, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, because that 322, dude, it doesn't have any filler.
None.
Okay, and I think you're doing it a disservice, in my opinion. Because really, I do. I'm sorry. Because look, let's just go right to the active ingredients. Crab meal.
Yeah.
Okay. Crab meal, neem seed meal, alfalfa meal, basalt, whatever that is.
That's a crushed rock.
Thank you. Okay. Well, so we're going to get into that.
Yes.
Okay. Fish bone meal, gypsum, seabird guano. Okay, we're not talking about bird poop from chicken houses. All right, with your, we've gone through this. Okay, bird poop from chicken houses. They'll say, "Oh, we heat treated. We got all the hormones out of there. We got all the pesticides out of there." And no, come, you ain't. No, you're not blowing up my skirt, dude. You ain't doing it. Ain't doing it. And when you heat treat it, you're destroying all the microbes.
You're not going to see any chicken meal or chicken. Yeah, compost chicken manure in any of our products.
Yeah, we don't use that stuff.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
It is.
Okay.
Pesticides, fungicides.
High quality products is what we like to say, quality in, quality out.
Yeah.
So we always are on the search for the best quality products to put into these.
Yeah. There's nobody up there feeding the seabirds hormones to make them bigger. Okay.
No, it's fish.
There's nobody up there putting pesticides, okay, and I'm talking about systemic pesticides in the seabirds' food so that they won't have insects and so forth.
Yeah.
All right. So, and then we go to Epsom salt, kelp meal. We're going to talk about that. Kelp meal's huge. Sulfate of potash and dolomite. All right. Totally organic. I love this fertilizer.
Yeah.
This to me is the, because what you're putting into your vegetables is what you're putting into your body.
Correct.
Okay. That is huge. I mean, just organics across the board. What you're putting into your plant, you're putting into your body. So when you are buying, let's talk about the guano again. When you're taking the bird poop of chickens out of the chicken house, that does have hormones in it, which has gone through the chicken body, systemic, and it has systemic pesticides in it. And don't tell me that you heat treated it. I'm not going to trust you. I don't trust you.
Well, composting just concentrates those things.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And so when you're taking that pure nitrogen content from the seabird guano, which is very high nitrogen.
It is.
It is totally pure, and it's totally, it doesn't have any of the adverse effects.
There's no chemicals in it.
Yes.
At all. You know, those birds have been fishing out in the ocean.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see any chemicals, you know, pesticides being applied to the ocean.
No.
So, let's go back what's in it. You have 8% calcium in this 322. That's why I love it for vegetables, because that is what a tomato plant has to have so that it doesn't have the blossom end rot.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it has to have 8% calcium. And 8% calcium, like you said, lets the cell function properly.
Right.
Yeah, it builds nice, strong cell walls.
It's hugely important.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. And the 322 is a very good rate. I'm sorry, I'm getting so excited. The 322 is a very good rate because, like on tomato plant and everything else, you do not want stretch.
Right.
Okay. No. You add too much nitrogen in relation to your other chemicals or other minerals, and you'll get stretch. That is the elongated internode, like my arm.
Yeah.
This is your internode. This is your node. I'd look really funny if my arms were 5 foot long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So your 322 was the perfect growth of all of our tomato plants. And I regulate everything with tomato plants because it's such a high C4 plant. I mean, it's just so demanding.
It really is. It's a fast-feeding annual.
Right. So if you could grow a good tomato plant, you can grow good anything.
Yeah.
And I do not want a tomato plant that's higher than Jack and the Beanstalk and falls over. Right?
Not at all.
Okay. So I really love your proportionate makeup of the this fertilizer right here at 322.
Thanks. And a big part of that was monitoring internodal distance in our growth trials, because it is 100% key to production. You need a tight, effective nodal distance so that you can build good flower clusters. You're not going to stretch out and have plants toppling over like Leaning Tower of Pisa on you because they're more structurally strong. They've got stronger cell walls, not only in the stalks from that calcium to hold it upright, but also in the skins to prevent them from splitting in, you know, wild irrigation swings, things like that. That calcium is just really integral for all of those pieces.
Mm. So this calcium, we're not talking about just ground up Tums, okay? You get this calcium from the crab meal, don't you?
You get some from the crab meal, you get some from the gypsum, and some from the dolomite.
Dolomite.
Yep.
Dolomite is calcium in usable form.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
you got calcium sulfate, you got calcium carbonate,
and calcium nitrate.
Calcium nitrate's the chemical version salt-based version, which has its place in agriculture, don't get me wrong. But for soil building...
Not my garden.
Yeah, for soil building, you want these sulfates and carbonates to long-term release that calcium, to have a grocery store for your plant there in the root zone.
Okay, right. So that's why you have the crab meal, which the calcium is more readily available.
Yes.
Right? Dolomite, which kind of is sustainable. Mm-hmm. Is that a good word?
Slower release.
Slower release, okay. And then you have the fishbone meal, another calcium.
Another calcium source.
Yeah, well, that's where you get your calcium and your nitrogen.
Some of the nitrogen, yeah. And actually a large amount of the phosphorus. It's interesting.
All right. So the crab meal I'm a big fan of. Okay, there's a company that sells just crab meal. And so I'm a big fan of that because crab meal, something about crab meal keeps your plant from getting disease. I don't understand it.
I got a little tidbit for you there.
He's getting ready.
So,
preach, brother.
Chitin.
Yeah.
Chitin is the key here. And, you know, you think about insect frass and how cool insect frass is for triggering a systematic autoimmune response in plants, right?
It
tells the plant, oh, I've got insects attacking me because there's all this chitin there. And so the plant kicks in its hormonal drive to protect the plant and be more vigorous and stronger to protect against a disease attack. Well, crab shell, shrimp shell, all of these are very, very high chitin products also. So that chitin breaking down in the soil triggers that systematic autoimmune response, which is so key in strengthening that hormonal release of the plant and preparing it for the pressures of the world around it. So it's kind of a hidden feature. And that's one thing we really focused on. The ingredient choices are like, okay, we need nitrogen. What else is this nitrogen source going to do for us? The neem seed meal. Neem seed oil is one of the best organic pesticides to prevent against all sorts of things as a spray, not only in the root zone, but on the plant. Using that neem seed meal protects the root zone, helps drive away insects that are problematic. It's not going to interfere with beneficial biology, arthropods, microarthropods, things like
nematodes.
That. Nematodes.
Root knot nematode is highly affected by chitin.
Okay.
So if you have those problems in your garden, which my father does, he has to lay off every other year because the root knot nematodes are so bad. We started pumping this into his garden, and he's happily surprised that he's having a better garden. Mm-hmm. The root knot nematodes are not showing up on his roots as much as they were. I mean, they're still there, but they're not having the same effect on his plants as they were before. So this is something that's really helped his garden. He's not sure where he got those root knot nematodes in his garden from, but they've been there now for many years.
Yeah, probably a chain store.
Yeah. You know, all these crazy soils that you buy from some of these places, that's why we really pride ourselves on trying to make the best products. You know? All
right. Now I want to talk alfalfa meal.
Ah. All right. Love some alfalfa.
I'm telling you, this is a very good fertilizer. And I want the word vegetable. Actually, I'm going to take my marker. I'm putting vegetable in every one of them.
All right.
I'm sorry, dude.
No, I like it.
Okay.
It appeals to vegetables, but we don't want people to not use it on other things.
Yeah, I get it.
On their vegetables. Yeah. But alfalfa meal, man, it's magic in the garden. And one of the biggest things about it is that nitrogen charge. It's a really fast-release nitrogen. It's going to break down quickly, feed all those microbes. You're going to get some fast action going on.
Yeah. Well, your soil is feeding the plant.
Yeah, and it's chewing up that nitrogen. It's soft. The bacteria can get through it easy. They're just having a heyday. But during that process, they're releasing all the hormones contained in the alfalfa. And especially the new growth, the early harvest alfalfa, is extremely high in auxins and a chemical called tricantinol. Now, tricantinol is a growth hormone that triggers fast, stable, sturdy growth in your plant. So that tricantinol release from alfalfa meal is super important. And it's another entourage effect from, hey, we want the nitrogen, but we're also getting these other things, these aminos, these hormones, these auxins.
Okay. So can we all agree that the same God that made plants made us?
For sure.
I'm right there with you.
So alfalfa grass is the best that you can feed your cattle.
Yeah. It's high protein.
Yeah. Okay. And there's a reason for it. So alfalfa meal is the best that you can feed your plants. Like I said, when you eat that plant, you're getting an alfalfa meal into your own body.
Correct.
Yeah.
We good?
100%. And you think about that protein. What is protein but amino acids?
Yeah.
And there's all these supplements out there. Oh, give amino acids to your plants.
Dude, you're right.
Give them the precursors. Let all that magic happen in the soil.
Yep. Awesome. Oh, wow. Okay. Basalt. Tell me what that is. I mean, do I put that on my meat?
Yeah, you could. might get a little gritty on the teeth there. But yeah, it's a crushed rock. Basalt is a volcanic rock, a very hard, dense volcanic rock. It's high in all of the different micronutrients, and it's also high typically in silica.
Whoa! Is that related to vermiculite?
No, not really. I mean, vermiculite's a different type of ore. It's like a puffed mica.
Okay,
but I mean, these are all mineral sources straight out of the ground that are then slightly manipulated to make them more plant available. Uh-huh. Like you think of volcanic soils and island soils and things like that where everything just grows wild. Well, those rocks, that lava rock breaks down real easy. That super dense basalt, we get ours out of Oregon. It's heavy, deep slab, like ground rock. So you got to grind it up and powder it, micronize it to allow it to release and allow all of that mineral transfer into the soil. So that's one thing that we use that basalt for, and it's a beautiful emerald green. It's got trace copper and other like trace iron, other trace elements as well. And more research is showing those trace elements are what are so quickly depleted from our soils. If we're not putting it back when we're feeding, you're running a deficit on those things.
Yeah, people don't think about like molybdenum. Say that five times.
Yeah,
right. Boron. You know, some of those very important microorganisms. Micro minerals.
And you need so little, but you need it.
You need it. Zinc.
Yeah.
Zinc's very important.
Funny that you say that. Zinc was one of the biggest challenges for us to get right. Like, 2 years into the process, we're like, man, we got this zinc deficiency. We got to get this right. How do we get that zinc in there? And because you need like a teaspoon in a yard.
Yeah.
how do you get it and get it distributed in there evenly? Oh, you're just going to sprinkle this here. Yeah. Well, this plant over there is not getting it. This isn't getting it. This is getting it all. So that was a big challenge for us. And one of the things that our research showed that we had to pay attention to those micros, we found a combined micronutrient that got that zinc up without having to literally sprinkle a little bit.
Never like single bag. That job.
Yeah. No Tinkerbell pixie dust here. Yeah.
All right. Wow. So that's fish bone meal. That's pretty much self-explanatory. That's where you get your calcium in and bonus nitrogen, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Gypsum. Tell us about gypsum.
Gypsum's another one of those calcium sources. It's going to, you know, help long-term buffer soil pH and keep it stable.
That's why I like gypsum. Keeps it stable.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like we were saying, those carbonate and sulfate calcium sources, you want to have both the dolomite and the gypsum. So you got a carbonate and a sulfate. So you get that sulfur and you get that extra carbon. And you got two different forms of calcium. So your plant can access what it wants, when it wants, based on the microbes doing their thing underneath.
All right. Seabird guano. Man, how'd you like to have that job?
Right.
What are you holding the bucket?
Yeah. Well, we had guano wars over this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there were major wars fought over islands to get this seabird guano.
Yeah. Josiah knows all about that. He brought that up to us. Yeah.
Yep. It's so important for agriculture.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot has changed in the bat guano and seabird guano world. You used to see these fossilized bat guano and seabird guanos on the shelves all over that were high potassium, high phosphorus products. You're not seeing those anymore because they changed the regulation on those products. Bat guano and seabird guano, the fossilized versions, they aren't calling them guano anymore. It has to be called rock phosphate because it's been fossilized to a fully rock version and no longer has nitrogen or the preserved DNA of the original birds.
Oh, my word.
Wow.
So this is a big thing, man. One of the leading guano producers in the world has been fighting with the USDA over this stuff. He's like, it's guano. It is what it is. It's fossilized. Yeah, and through the fossilization product, you're going to lose that DNA. It's not going to last through that. But, you know, powers that be say, well, no, this is rock phosphate, and it has to have nitrogen content. So you'll still see those high nitrogen bat guanos and high nitrogen seabird guanos. But what you used to see will now be called rock phosphate, and you'll have a really hard time differentiating it from like Tennessee brown rock phosphate or other mined sources.
Yeah. Trigger word, poop's a big deal. You know, so imagine having a war last 4 years over bird poop. Just imagine that, because it was just such a big
source.
Deal for agriculture, the guano island. So, and they had not just I think it was like Peru and was it Peru and Colombia? I might be saying that wrong. Peru and Cuba, somewhere. Yeah. You know, they were fighting over this, and one of the wars lasted 4 years long over these islands for agriculture. I mean, just a very big deal, you know?
It really is.
All right. Look, I want to talk about Epsom salts now, okay? Because my grandma used to bathe in it.
Lovely. My grandpa, too.
Yeah. So tell us the beneficial effects of Epsom salts rather than, you know, making your joints better.
Well, Epsom salt, it's magnesium sulfate, right? It's a man-made product, but it's a naturally occurring salt.
Sure.
Right?
Okay, yeah.
People get all hung up on the word salts and salt-based fertilizers. And
no, that's what all fertilizer is. It's salt.
Yeah, in so many cases. Well, magnesium sulfate is just that. It's magnesium and it's sulfur. Yeah. It's easy to break down. It breaks down really effectively in the root zone, but it's one of the only easily available organic forms of magnesium, which calcium and magnesium.
You have to have,
they have to be in balance to get the benefit out of the calcium, and it's anywhere from a 5-to-1 to 10-to-1 ratio that most people are looking to see that calcium and magnesium number. But that mag sulf is an easy way to get it.
Okay, now we have kelp meal. All right, how come you didn't just list seaweed?
Well, kelp
is a good question, right?
Yeah, kelp is really specific, and there's so many different seaweeds.
What's the big deal between kelp and seaweed?
Well, kelp has got all these hormones, and it's not necessarily a seaweed. It's actually, you know, it's some say it's an algae, larger algae, but either way, it's got all of these PGRs, naturally occurring plant growth hormones, plant growth regulators that help keep plants squat, help them stay in their lane hormonally, right? So you're not getting wild, stretchy tomatoes or really super squat tomatoes that like really? Just stack on each other. Yeah. You know, kelp is a great thing for that. But kelp is also dangerous for heavy metals. You have to use it in small amounts because it's naturally high in arsenic and other things that are going to occur out in the oceans there. So we use a small amount of a really clean kelp source so you're protecting.
Is it Norwegian?
We don't use the Norwegian. We use as much local as possible. We try and stay to California source materials for our California plant. We're going to stay to East Coast source materials for our South Carolina plant that's about to open. And that's one thing you'll see as you start to see soil, some of our substrates coming out of South Carolina, is you're going to see we're using forest material from out there because we want to use what's local, what's available, so we can keep the cost as low as possible to the consumer.
Okay.
Wow.
And we kind of hit on the sulfate of potash and the dolomite.
Yeah. And sulfate of potash, it's just a nice, clean, organic potassium.
Yeah.
Just get right to the point.
Right, right. You just take things that are out of your, after building a fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right there.
Little scoop.
And the beauty of these products is you don't have to go to your bucket of crab meal, go over to the fire pit, run out to the alfalfa field. Dude. It's one scoop. You get all those things. And that's one of the, it drove me nuts for decades in the garden. All right, well, I got to put a scoop of all this on every plant.
Yeah.
Half a scoop of all this on every plant. Two-thirds a scoop of this and on.
Yeah, so I don't have to add ashes to my garden anymore.
No,
in the off-season it won't hurt, but you got it for the growing season right here.
Go. Awesome. Cool. You got anything you want to add?
I love that fertilizer.
I would say, like Adrian came up trying to sell a cancer cure. Try it out. See if it works for you and just see the results. I would highly encourage you, to get, you know, one of these other, name brand fertilizers and do a comparison yourself, and see the results for yourself. Cause I'm telling you, you'll be pretty impressed. And I could almost guarantee you after doing that, you would switch over to Royal Gold Crown Jewels fertilizers.
Yeah, so back to how much that you use, because that was a big thing. We of other organic fertilizers, I mean, dude, we'd be using like 4 cups per plant. It drove me crazy. It was actually too expensive for me.
Yeah.
And I bought it wholesale. So on your 322, my understanding is you use like 4 to 8 ounces per cubic foot. Is that right?
Yes.
4 to 8 ounces per cubic foot.
And that's for general feeding. And the beauty of it being organic is you can use way more than that if that's what floats your boat, but you don't need to. You hit a wall of diminishing returns where you just are throwing extra money at your plants.
So 4 ounces, that's volume. That's like half a cup.
Yep, half a cup. And you can do that by weight or volume.
Okay.
It's pretty close.
Okay. And how much of that? I can also use this as a tea, like the 555?
Correct.
Okay.
The others are better for teas than the 555 because of those micronized ingredients. You're going to get more to go into suspension. It's going to get more of the actual product into the tea and then onto the root zone.
All right. Okay. Let's move to the bloom.
Okay, go ahead.
Cool. Did you have something?
No.
All right. Your bloom is a 142, okay, 142 fertilizer. Tell us about when should we use the bloom?
So bloom is anytime any of your plants are moving into their flowering phase or flowering, whether they're producing a fruit or a flower, that's when you want to drop that nitrogen content down. We still have one on that 142. Right. We want a little
bit. Just to make things happen.
You need to keep it green and growing.
Keep it going.
But you want that phosphorus and potassium to really feed the flowering process, encourage seed production, things like that. So as soon as you start to see the flowers coming on, jump to that bloom fertilizer.
Yeah, I noticed that you added shrimp meal in there.
Yeah. And that's another well-balanced, but it's got that crustacean meal, the chitin. It's got a lot of benefit to it, not only some nitrogen, but some potassium and phosphorus as well.
Okay. And on that, once again, you use about 4 to 8 ounces per cubic foot of soil volume?
Correct.
Yes. Very little.
Very little.
All right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, very little. I mean, the other stuff was like 1 to 2 cups.
Yeah,
and it'll be crazy.
You could go that high if you want to, and you're not going to burn, but you're going to waste your money. I mean, you don't want to spend $20 on a $2 tomato.
Most of the time, I'll do high side. All right, I'll do the high side on my initial, and after that, I'll do the 4 ounces, and I'll be very happy with that.
And I like to do that too. And you know, when I see myself, my plants are really going for it. You're like, man, it's this is as hard as it's going to go all season. I'll give him an extra scoop then, and that's when I'm moving to the boost. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to make sure that, you know, 0-15-11, that's got 17% calcium in it from the bone.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I want to go right into that, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've grown my plant in a nice stable form, okay, to where it's not stretchy and falling over, all right? Mm-hmm. Yep. And so it's starting to bloom, so I use the bloom, and I get all these blossoms.
Mm-hmm.
Now I go to the boost.
100%.
Which is a 0-15-11?
0-15-11 with 17% calcium. And it's
gonna, oh, that's a lot.
It's just going to trigger those that flowering. It's going to keep the flower production happening. So that first wave of flowers isn't your only fruit set. You're going to keep going to get a longer fruit range.
Yeah, so I started using this towards the end of the season when things start to putter out a little bit. And it just kept things, you know, normally, you know, getting mid-June going into July, you can start to see a here in Northwest Arkansas, a slowdown in production because of the heat stress. And, you know, your tomato leaves curling in because of the hot sun and scorch and stuff. So, but we started using this and it just pushed it right along. You know, in the spring, you get a really heavy harvest usually on your tomatoes. You know, your first go around, they all start turning red and then it's game on. And then normally it slows down, like I had said, but using the Imperial Boost, it was like it never just stopped. Turned spring again.
Yeah,
you know, getting back in, well, spring, I should say
tomato
summer
fire.
Because of tomatoes. But, yeah, it was just amazing. It just kept pushing them out, pushing them out. We did not, on one single tomato, out of all the tomato plants that we had, we did not get any blossom and rot. We did not get flower fall. And we had the best tasting, I mean, oh, my goodness, just good tasting tomatoes. You should put that clip up of the tomato plants. But, man, it was just amazing. And then it seemed like we got far less cat eye. Now, cat eye is usually something that has to do with, you know, inconsistent watering and then heavy watering and then the tomato splits. But I don't know if that had something to do with it because we were somewhat getting busy with other things and being kind of inconsistent.
Yeah.
But a great shell. And then they seemed to last a lot longer sitting on the kitchen counter, too.
And our cucumbers were huge. We had great cucumber production.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And super crisp.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and then pickling them. Yeah. No soft pickles.
Yeah, he's our pickle.
No soft pickles, so we canned a whole bunch of them.
I still like to lime some of my pickles when I make my sweet scorpion pickles.
Okay.
I like to lime them. I really like that super crisp.
Yeah.
Yeah, what, it's
interesting. What's that liming do? Bringing calcium in?
Yep.
To the pickling process
yep.
to keep it crisp.
Yep.
Exactly. But if you have the calcium from the get-go, man,
yeah.
these were some crisp pickles.
They were good.
I mean, we could pull some out of the cellar right now. They'll still be probably that way.
Yeah, and they were good right off the vine.
Well, guys, we're getting here.
Yeah, but
towards
let's make this into two videos. Can we not do that?
One of the things that that Mark, you were hitting on all these ingredients into these. One of the things that you didn't hit on is nastinite. And it's a new product that we brought into the market.
I didn't know what that was. I didn't want to sound stupid.
Let Michael tell you about it, because it's a great product.
Did you make up a word or what?
Well, you know.
I mean, because that's a cool name.
You'd have thought so by the reaction we got from fertilizer.
Is it from the moon?
It's not from the moon. It's terrestrial. But it is a mined mineral, and it is a calcium silicate, right? So calcium, silica, two utterly important and underrated things. Silica is about to be reclassified as an essential plant nutrient. You're going to start seeing it on guaranteed analysis. They are going to change the way we understand silica in plant production. It's coming real soon. They're working through it at the governmental levels to change how we define it. But
yeah, explain it.
So it's really interesting because silica is not now noted as a plant food. It's not a plant-based mineral. You look at your primary, your secondary, and your micronutrients, and silica is nowhere, right? It is an essential plant nutrient. Without it, nothing grows. So there's some really brilliant people, Wendy Zellner for one, and some other folks who are researchers who are proving this, have proven the data out, and are now going to all of these regulation officials and saying, hey, we got this wrong. Let's fix it. But the wollastonite is one of the most available naturally occurring forms of silica. So it's a calcium and silicon. So you're checking both boxes of those cell wall strengthening, hardening elements that really provide vibrance and health to your plant. They're going to keep your branches stronger, less breakage and snappage. Your skin's stronger without being
less,
tough.
Less bud pressure.
Well, yes.
Can I add to that? Because also, if your cell walls are stronger, you know, you're basically your shell around your fruit. Blanching tomatoes is a lot easier because the skin is actually right thicker around the tomato. So if you are a canner, and having higher calcium is also going to produce a thicker skin around your tomato. So that way, if you're canning and blanching the tomatoes, peeling them, or peeling any of the fruit, it's going to be a lot easier.
Is that in every one of your fertilizers?
That's just in the all-purpose, and that's a newer ingredient that we recently kind of discovered and sourced out.
But the all-purpose is a newer product.
Yep. We didn't have that in our toolbox when we were building out the other fertilizers.
Gotcha. Is the wollastonite in some of the soils as well?
That's going to be in the newer soils.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're pretty much hooked on this. It's a big deal.
Yeah, the results are in. Yeah. We run everything through our soil lab and grow outs and data analysis.
My plants, after running it, I found going side by side with the all-purpose and the grow was spider mite pressure was less on the plants with wollastonite in it. So it's just one of those things. It definitely helps with the cell wall structure of the plant, making it less appetizing to bugs, let's say. It's just harder for them to chew through it. So definitely is a good product. I'm encouraged by it.
Okay. That's awesome. Okay. I won't go back to Imperial Boost, though. All right, we'll just make two shows out of this. I don't care.
All right.
Okay. we got you.
Luckily, you're the boss.
The Imperial Boost the Imperial Boost is one of my highlights, because that's actually that was where I it took me over the edge as far as how good your product was.
Yeah.
When I started using Imperial Boost midsummer to fall, I saw a huge difference because I did one without and one with. Okay, so I actually did a trial on that. And so how much do I use of that Imperial Boost, and can I use it as a tea as well?
Yes.
Yeah, you definitely can use it as a tea. You use, you know,
I think you use very little, don't you?
You use very little, you know, a couple tablespoons per gallon. And, you know, there is some chunkier particulate from some of the bone meal in there, but most of it's micronized. So you can pour that through a pantyhose or a sock to filter it out if you're going to run it through a pump or a hose to keep that grit from jamming up your equipment. But most of it's going to go into suspension. A lot of times I like to make a slurry out of it, mix up a 5-gallon bucket with a couple tablespoons.
Put it in the soil.
And then just toss it right on the soil. That way it spreads it out. It's less dusty. But it also activates everything, especially you throw some bacteria in there, a little fungi, some inoculants. It's going to help just make everything become more available faster.
You only use between 2 to 5 tablespoons per plant. Am I right?
Per gallon.
Per gallon of soil.
So, yeah, it depends on how big your root system is.
Oh, yeah,
how big your plants is. Yeah, exactly. You know, if you're growing some dwarf tomatoes out on your back deck, you're not going to use as much as somebody with a tomato tree out and back in their well-tilled garden soil.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. For field applications, you use about 4 to 6 cups per 100 square feet.
Yeah, it's
something like that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it's going to bring that calcium up, get that P and the K up. Mm-hmm. It's also, we keep talking about how great it is to boost the flowers and fruit production when you're already there. If you're having issues with internodal length, things stretching, things getting bigger than you want them to earlier, this is a great product to put on early in the season to keep those internodes regulated and tight. So you do it once, you know, just after plant, and it's going to keep things tight until you get into flowering zone.
Yeah, we recommend this as bed prep too. Getting your beds prepped for the next season, going a few weeks before planting or direct sowing, so that way the bed is already ready and it can get right to absorbing those nutrients right away.
Yeah, and for bulbs, like
it's
bulb city right now. You got tulips, you got daffodils.
That's right. Garlic, all these things definitely benefit. The guys at Baker Creek, they love that product. They use it on all their stuff, too. You'll see them raving about it. When you get out in the garden, they're like, oh, yeah, that stuff really kicked that stuff into gear.
Yeah, so as soon as those bulbs are popping out and before they flower, go and give them a little sprinkle around the base of those beds, and you're really going to see some nice, hearty, thick, fleshy flower.
Yeah. See, I went through, they had one big tent or one big building of just the vegetables that they grew.
Yeah.
Okay, to where you can see the final result. Those are the most beautiful, perfect vegetables I've ever seen in my life.
It's shocking, isn't it?
It was shocking. Oh, yeah. I mean, the carrots were just perfect.
And we're lucky enough to get kind of a full greenhouse tour and go through and see where they're growing. And it's not like...
Yeah, they didn't let me in there.
We pulled the one cauliflower that was perfect. No, there's a row of 100 of those.
Yes!
Things. Yeah. And they're all perfect. And you're like, well, how do you pick? And they're like, I mean, I don't know. It's the third one from the left. It looks great. And we're just like, man, these are all just glorious. And they grow these...
We were there in the fall and we were harvesting cabbages that were this big.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were cutting into them, and they were just as sweet as could be.
Sweetest cabbage I ever ate in my life.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Just amazing. Everything out there is just amazing. And they'll tell you, too, we're not growing this for anything but the picture value. Mm-hmm. So they really, really concentrate on making those plants look so perfect. And they're... God, they do. They do a great job.
Yeah. Well, you know, thanks to you, they're using your products.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
We appreciate it because they make us look good.
Yeah. All right. I want to circle back around to the planting mix, okay?
Yeah.
Because here at Rockwell Farms for years, and a lot of the other nurseries here, we use the Cottonburg compost.
Okay.
Okay? So you have a planting mix, and I want you to tell us the advantages of using the planting mix and compare it side by side with the Cottonburg compost.
So they're very similar in concept, where these are composted, broken down organic matter, right? You're taking the Cottonburg. There's issues with that, not necessarily bad issues, but things to pay attention to, that it is going to be acidic and it's going to be really high in nitrogen, right? And it's another high cellulose product. It's going to break down and get finer and finer and get muddier and sediment and fill your pore space over time. Our planting mix is more lignin-based organic matter. It's forest material, it's cocoa fiber, it's got some worm castings for the biology, but it's going to be a more stable pH and a longer-lasting organic matter. So really the best thing to do is use things like that together, right? So you've got this nitrogen-rich thing that's going to maybe play with your pH a little bit. Cut that in half. Run some planting mix with it. You're getting some of that nitrogen, but that planting mix is going to pull some of the nitrogen out, kind of help keep it from burning and stabilize that pH change. But
you're talking about the cotton burr burning.
The cotton burr burning, because
it is a consideration.
It really is. It's a high nitrogen product, and I noticed that it's not listed as a fertilizer source. It's not labeled as a fertilizer, so you don't know how much nitrogen.
Right.
And so one batch of this compost could have 7%, another could have 9 or 10 or 11 or 15. If they're not quantifying it, you don't know, and you don't know how accurately people have composted things. So there's question marks there with planting mix. It's stable. It's ready to use. Everything's labeled. You don't have these missing pieces that you have to kind of piece together based on the results.
It drains really well, too, and can be as versatile as a potting mix. I have all my citrus at my place in the potting mix, or in the planting mix, I'm sorry. It's an amazing, very versatile mix.
Yeah, it's a long-term soil conditioner, too. It's going to allow that permeability. Water's just going to go in really nicely to the soil.
So it's kind of like humus, right?
Yeah, but it's not quite so far degraded.
Right. So it has high CEC content.
Correct.
Which is cation exchange capacity. And we talk about that as far as vermiculite is concerned. So your humus, okay, will hold minerals until the plant is ready for it, correct?
Yes. Creating that grocery store in the root zone again.
Well, see, that's the
whole concept.
All right. That's a benefit of using that other than the Cottonburg compost.
Yeah. It's going to hold on to it, and it's going to break down much, much slower, right? So it's going to give you that fluff, that loft season after season. You bring a couple bags in each season, and you're just going to notice long-term soil improvement.
So you can plant directly in your planting mix, correct?
Yeah.
So
seed starting, too.
If you're planting if you plant a tree or a shrub, you can just use that planting mix after digging your hole, okay?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Take out that clay soil and all the rocks and use your planting mix in there, and therefore the root system can go through that really quickly.
Correct.
And then it will, it has a high CEC content, therefore when you fertilize your tree, it'll hold it and you'll get a lot quicker growth.
Correct. And we see a lot of times people will take, you know, a few shovelfuls of the soil they remove from the hole and mix it with the planting mix and then put that back in. So you're fluffing that native material up. You're getting some of those native microorganisms, indigenous microorganisms, they call them in Korean natural farming and modern natural farming. You want those native things going on, but you want to give them all this extra food and kind of fuel sources
with
that high carbon soil.
Because with the Convert compost, it has to break down before you get that good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I built beds with the planting mix last year and just 3 inches on top, brought a tiller in, tilled it in, came back in, put one more inch on top and grew in that. And my tomatoes were over 16 feet. They ran over the top of my 8 foot trellises and all the way back down the ground by the end of October. So
you're feeding your neighbors.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. They're on the other side of the fence picking your tomatoes.
What'd we say? I think we harvested 15 to 20 pounds of tomatoes 6 weeks in a row from June and into July off of 12 plants. Wow. It was impressive. I would leave for work and come home that week, and then the counters would be completely full of tomatoes. And my wife was like, there's your weekend. And I would be canning all weekend long.
Awesome. So when you talk about incorporating it in with the existing soil, what proportion are we talking about? Are we talking about 50-50 on a clay soil here in Northwest Arkansas?
You can – that's subjective.
Yeah.
A little bit will help. Even if you're just like top dressing and tilling it in year after year, mulching with it and then tilling it in, getting just a couple percent. But at 50%, yeah, you're going to create – a beautiful, soft, loamy soil. You're going to get all that micronutrient.
There's your word, loamy.
It's going to feel soft. It's going to break down and get that just, you know, it's not going to clump too hard like the clay does naturally. This, you know, all that organic matter is going to keep it more flockable.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Cool beans. All right. Is there anything else that you want to add to our?
I could go on for days. So
I know I could too.
Stop me eventually.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, why don't you close us out there?
Hey, yeah. Thank you for watching and listening. If you are new to the show, again, you can the places you can find us, we're on Pandora, Spotify, Amazon Music. What's the other one?
Just everywhere.
Apple. We're Apple. Facebook, Instagram, X. You can find us anywhere. Just look us up. You'll figure it out. Awesome. We so appreciate you joining us and listening to us. We love talking with you. If you have any gardening questions, this helps other gardeners out there. So you're not just helping yourself get the answers to this. You're helping potentially thousands of other people that might have the same problems. So you can go to rockwellfarms.com. You can leave a question there. If you're following on YouTube, you can also leave question in the comments. We answer those.
Tell them to like us.
Or, yeah, like and subscribe. And
yeah, you can find us too on Instagram, Facebook, and those social media.
Yeah, why don't you tell us about that?
Put that up, Jess. Yeah.
Yeah, so you can find us at Royal Gold Soils on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. We do a ton of videos talking about different things too, some education stuff. Got questions about your product.
Can we like each other?
Yeah, let's we'll do a collaborative post. You'll find it. We'll do a post out there so everybody can see both of our platforms. But yeah, www.royalgoldcoco.com.
Hey, and real quick before we leave the show, I just want to give a shout out to Happy Goat Creamery, the awesome crazy goat lady that sells the most amazing soaps. By the way,
interviewed her. Did you really?
Yeah, yes, we sure did. So
there's a lady here called the Crazy Goat Lady. I want to go check it out and see what this is all about. I have no idea how she makes this soap, but I tell you what, she has a pretty cool setup here. Let's check it out. Hey, y'all. I'm here with Noelle, and she is the Crazy Goat Lady. So she's just an interesting person, and I thought that you might want to know about her. Tell us about what's going on here. You have soap everywhere.
Yes, I do. We have goats. I make goats milk soap with the soap because it gives it a shelf life. Because I don't know if you guys ever, milk doesn't last very long, right?
Sure.
So we were like, we need it to last a long time so we can sell it. And so we ended up making goat milk soap, right? My best friend, she was like, what kind of soap do you want? And I was like, soap I can use. And so we ended up with 80 different types.
Well, you have a soap. Go ahead.
We were set up at Baker Creek and she got set up next to the plant guy and they got married.
Oh my word.
And so they met
Noelle, that's awesome.
Like 7 years ago. And awesome. So he was like, I got 160 acres in hay equipment, bring the goats up. So now
that's
we're
awesome.
On his place in St. Louis instead of West Plains. and we have all these goats, and he said I could have as many goats as I wanted, but then he realized he should add two important words, within reason, because I was going to do 2,000.
That's awesome. This one says soy-free lavender. Is there lavender in the soap?
Lavender essential oil.
Okay.
Yeah, it's distilled down into little drops. 78 cups of tea make one drop of essential oil.
Well, that one says blueberry.
I got blueberry. But this is a fragrance oil. Because you can't make an essential oil with blueberries.
This
Sorry,
smells
guys.
Great.
I know, right? And I have strawberry and I have black licorice.
Okay. You got to help me now. I'm a nurseryman. How come, what's the relationship between goats and soap?
Well, they don't eat it. I can tell you that. Okay, when you make soap normally, you take your water and you mix it with your lye, and then you heat up your oils and you mix them all together, right? With goat milk soap, you take goat milk instead of water. And it adds extra nutrients, I guess you would call it. Whatever's in milk, right?
Yeah.
Into your soap. Pretty cool, right?
That is awesome.
It makes it really awesome. That's why goat milk soap is so renowned, is because it has extra, they call it fatty acids. Uh-huh. So it makes it better for your skin. But I don't know if that's true, though. We are just pure soap.
Well, we're going to buy some and find out.
That's a good idea.
Noelle, thank you so much for being a part of our channel.
Awesome. You're very good at the eye contact thing. I don't got it.
You're okay. You did great. No, thank you, Noelle.
We're going to make this into two shows, man. She's cool.
I've been using the soap in the shower to wash my hands, to wash my beard. It is awesome. I feel good, and I am soft. So you can check her out at www.cheapgoatsoap.com, and it's really cheap, handmade goat soap.
We'll put her up on the screen, too.
Yeah. Also, if you guys are out and about and come to Baker Creek, stop by and see us. I will always be there. We're filtering other people from our company in through to come in and hang out and meet the rest of the team out there, but definitely come by and see us and see what we're doing.
Yeah, those festivals are a great time. Don't miss another. It's worth your time.
Yeah, you'll have a heck of a time. So, all right. Hey, thanks again. We'll talk to you next time.
Yep.
Thank you so much.